So when managers perceive stress or are experiencing stress at their jobs, organisations run the risk of instigating a domino effect of stress development among employees. And it's been shown that managers do, in fact, transmit stress onto their employees. So it helps us as health professionals, coaches, teachers, and leaders to not only be aware of our own nervous system states, but also of that of the people that we are working with. Hello, and a very warm welcome to Neuroplasticity Nerds, the leading nervous system podcast. I'm Jessica Maguire, and today I'm going to be talking to you about stress and emotion contagion. So I know a lot of people say that they can tell when their nervous system changes when they're around other people who are dysregulated. This can be especially true for coaches, health practitioners, people who work in leadership and need to run one-to-one sessions. It can be really challenging. And today I wanted to talk about the science behind this and to wrap it up with some things that we can put in place today that can help us take care of our own nervous system so we're not so impacted by the people around us. This is something we've been seeing as we wrap up the most recent group with the 8-week vagus nerve program. And this cohort, particularly the coaches, teachers, the health practitioners, told us that one of the main benefits they got out of doing the vagus nerve program was seeing how their nervous system changed so that they could actually stay more regulated throughout the day. Now, it's not always easy to do this. If we have a full patient list and we're back to back seeing people, if we're in meetings all day that's back to back, and some of those are really challenging. What we're hearing from our students say is that they experience empathy fatigue, they feel themselves get to the end of the day, they're overwhelmed, they feel absolutely drained. And this is really something that we need to be proactive with if we want to have longevity in our career. And if we don't want to fall into those patterns of burnout and needing to take time off work because the work that we're doing is too much for our nervous system. So really, what we first need to understand is that the nervous system is relational. It's easy to think of ourselves as separate and that it's really up to us to independently take care of our nervous system, but that's not what the science is showing us. And we can understand this through the biopsychosocial model. So biological things affect our health, like our gut microbiome, the health of our vagus nerve, if we have an injury or pain. We also know that psychological things can affect our health and our nervous system. So this can be the thoughts and the stories and beliefs that we have, our memories as well. But what's less talked about is the social factors that affect our nervous system, or the outside-in things. And this is where our relationships, particularly our professional relationships, can come into play, but also the work that we do. Particularly if we're helping people who have experienced chronic and traumatic stress, which is a large part of the students that come through nervous system school. And if we look at the science, some people think that to think that stress and emotions are contagious is a little bit alternative, but that's not really what the science is showing. So a really good study demonstrated in 2014 that infants catch their mother's physiological stress reactivity entirely through the interactions with their mothers. So this is without the exposure to the stressor itself. And these effects can have implications for understanding transgenerational health and well-being. So mother and infant attunement is likely highly adaptive, and presumably it's evolved for a variety of reasons, such as detecting and communicating danger from imminent threats and also from environmental hazards. And relational processes between mothers and infants have long-lasting modulatory effects on social and health outcomes. So if we look right back to when we're a baby in our mother's belly, we are impacted by her stress levels. We know that stress hormones can cross the placenta and impact the baby. And once the baby is born, we really see that there is this relational aspect taking place. Skin-to-skin contact, And that beautiful time when a baby is placed on a parent's chest, that can actually start to facilitate some of the hormones that play important roles in our endocrine system. And what's so fascinating is that the vagus nerve is myelinated by things like the skin-to-skin contact, the sound of the parent's voice with prosody. And so we're really seeing the ways that the mother attunes, but this is also the father, to the baby, is really shaping the nervous system. That's how relational it is. So we've come into the world very dependent on our caregivers' nervous systems to help our own develop healthily. There was also a great 2016 study that found that teachers' occupational stress is linked to students' physiological stress regulation. So what we're seeing is stress contagion in the classroom. And that has a lot of relevance to teacher burnout as well, because it can create this two-way loop where the students are dysregulated, which can create stress in the teacher, and that can be mirrored back to the students as well. So there is some good research to show that. And one study that I found really interesting that came out in the last 2 years looked at the way that leaders and managers act as what we might think of as nerve centers for their team or the people that work around them. So when managers perceive stress or are experiencing stress at their jobs, organizations run the risk of instigating a domino effect of stress development among employees. And it's been shown that managers do, in fact, transmit stress onto their employees. So a critical component of effective leadership is the leader's own self-regulation and resilience. And stress contagion largely happens outside of conscious awareness. Most of the time, mindset strategies aren't going to be enough to bring nervous system regulation. And this had me reflecting a lot going back several years ago, and also now in times where I am a leader at Nervous System School with our small but very mighty team. So if I go back several years looking at when I was a physiotherapist, I did have challenges in knowing how to take care of my own nervous system. And I think that if you have empathy for other people, that can be a normal part. But sometimes we can feel ourselves leaning forward, leaning in. So we feel that sympathetic, mobilizing energy in our nervous system that may want to encourage us to fix someone or rescue somebody. And that is something that we need to work with ourselves. So once I understood the nervous system in more detail and really took in that co-regulation was an important part of the treatment, I transformed how I showed up as a health professional. The actual part of co-regulation, being able to help somebody else coax their nervous system back towards regulation, is so important for a range of different practitioners. You know, for me, I was working with people who had pain, and we know that there's a link with the autonomic nervous system. So being able to give that co-regulation was certainly part of the treatment. As I empowered the patient to then take care of their own body. And as I think about this as a leader, we had a team training 2 weeks ago, and we spent the day really looking at how we can individually build things like our awareness to recognize our own nervous system. But that is also so we can build this mutual awareness as a team and recognize how other people's nervous systems might be and when we might need to lean into this co-regulation. But it's also been, for me, an area where I'll continue to work to try and show up as a leader that can offer that co-regulation. And that doesn't mean that we're always going to get it perfect. You know, we are going to make mistakes. But I think as long as our team knows that we're trying and working towards that, then they have grace for us. But how exactly does this relational nervous system work? Well, the social engagement system is really the way that we can look at this as a framework of understanding. And the social engagement system is made up of the vagus nerve, as well as other important cranial nerves, and the way that signals are also sent up to the brain. So as you're listening, you might be able to place one hand on your heart and then the other one on the side of your cheek. Now, if you're driving, remember, this might not be safe, but between those two hands, we have what we might call our heart-voice-face connection of the social engagement system. And what this means is that we really do wear our heart on our face. So if we have times of stress, the cranial nerves that connect with the vagus nerve, particularly the facial nerve, will change our facial expression. And this is particularly true of the upper face. So we can see when somebody is regulated because they're smiling with their eyes and they're sending those cues of warmth. Now, these signals, they're not being necessarily processed by our thinking brain or the outer cortex. It's happening further down outside of conscious awareness in our survival brain. And I find this interesting because we put so much emphasis on saying the right words, so much emphasis on saying the perfect thing. And words are absolutely important. But what will really help to create powerful shifts in the people that we're working with, whether that's as a health practitioner, a coach, a leader, a manager, a teacher, is the state that we're in. Those cues will be sent to another person's survival brain as a form of bottom-up regulation, which can help to powerfully shift their state. And one of those things can be our own facial expression. The other way that we communicate with our social engagement system is through our voice. Now, I know that I sing all the time to my daughter and I do it intuitively. And I speak to her in that sing-songy voice as well. So parents do this intuitively. They know that this is going to help their children feel loved and safe. And so when we know that we have access to this social engagement system, then our voice will have prosody. So there'll be changes in rhythm and pitch. And as other people are listening to this, and this doesn't mean we need to talk to them in a sing-songy voice, but as they're listening to that voice where you're regulated, that will be helping them to access their own social engagement system, and that can be a portal to regulation for them. Now, the other thing that happens as we access our social engagement system is the muscles of the middle ear change so that we detect mid-frequency sounds or the sounds of the human voice. And so this speaks a lot to having those difficult conversations. If we are not regulated, the muscles of our middle ear change so that we are going to detect more predator sounds. Now, if somebody is in the sympathetic nervous system state or there's fight or flight or they're really anxious, they may not be in the best state to hear something for negotiations, for having hard conversations. And this is where we need to have regulation first before we can have those conversations. And part of what makes us successful health practitioners, coaches, teachers, or leaders is being able to recognize this in somebody else. This is where it helps to be trauma-informed because we can say, well, if Jenny is at the moment in high levels of anxiety, having this conversation isn't going to be the best thing for her at the moment. Or it could be, well, if Michael is shut down, not engaging, his face is blank, and he's not really communicating much, having this hard conversation is not going to be the thing that serves him the most. And that's from a neurobiological point of view. If we move into freeze or we move into the state of collapse or the dorsal vagal state where there's shutdown, we are actually going to find it very difficult to communicate. We will not only lose access to the social engagement system, but an important area in our brain that has to do with taking what we feel and expressing it with words, known as the Broca's area, can actually go offline. And if we are encouraging people to have conversations when they're in high levels of shutdown, that can make them feel worse and they can dissociate further from their body. So it helps us as health professionals, coaches, teachers, and leaders to not only be aware of our own nervous system states, but also of that of the people that we are working with. And behavior really does make sense when we look at it through the lens of the nervous system. So if we think of starting out at this set point, and if we're stressed, we move away from it. Through co-regulation, we have the ability to come back to that set point. So we might feel ourselves mobilized with that sympathetic nervous system energy where there's urgency, there's anxiety, there could be anger. But the co-regulation that we receive can help us shift back towards our baseline. Now, we can also find that if one person is dysregulated and they begin to interact with another person because of this relational aspect, then we can see co-dysregulation. So we move away from that set point, and then by the interaction with somebody else who's dysregulated, we can continue to move further away. And as our own nervous system shifts towards that mobilizing anxiety or that dorsal vagal shutdown, we can both continue to be dysregulated. And this can be the basis for a lot of conflict, but from what we hear from our students, there are challenges in staying regulated right throughout the day when working with a number of people that are having a difficult time. So we really need to have this framework of understanding that helps us to see these responses, and not just in a cognitive way, but to recognize, oh, my body's stiffening. Oh, my heart's pounding. My stomach has tightened. I have my hands in fists. And to see how we can proactively manage our emotional states and our nervous system early on. And to do that, we really need to have a level of what we call interoceptive awareness, where we can read these bodily signals and we can see what's happening in the moment. It can also help if we can recognize what's happening in our body. So if there is a sense of urgency and somebody's telling us about their difficult time and we feel ourselves leaning in and wanting to rescue and wanting to fix, that we can say, oh, my body's really leaning forward and there's a resistance and a tension to this person's experience. I actually feel responsible for getting them out of it. And so we can make the shifts in our body. We can use resources in the heat of the moment that are going to help us right there and then shift back towards regulation, even if we are working with a number of people who are dysregulated through the day. And this comes back to the vagus nerve as well, which is forming this two-way communication between our brain and body, particularly the internal bodily signals that we notice. But it's also other parts of our brain-body system as well. And those sensory systems, such as proprioception or the position of our body in space, and being able to recognize as we might say, oh, my voice is shifting. I feel myself starting to talk really fast and I'm taking a breath every couple of words and I'm not able to just slow down and think before I speak. Sometimes if we're in that sympathetic state of urgency, then we may feel like we need to fill the silence with every word that we can. So these internal bodily signals are really important, and recognizing what's happening in our voice and tuning into what our body is doing, because this is the foundation of how we recognize what our emotions are. So it's two or more bodily signals that make up our emotions. And the sooner we can tune in with accuracy to our bodily sensations, technically, the more emotional intelligence we have and the more empowered we are to proactively take care of our nervous system states. But what tends to happen is we start to get overwhelmed and we lose this connection to our body. And we might find that we're relying more from the information outside of us to tell us how we are. And so this you can think of as a spectrum between what we call interoception, or the messages inside our own body, and exteroception, or what's happening outside of us. So what can tend to happen is that as we get dysregulated, or we shift away from our set point and we start to feel anxious or wound up, then we may tune out more from our body and we may look outside of us to see how things are. This can be in the time where we're having a difficult conversation. It can be when we have a sense of urgency, like we're falling behind. We need to get our own work done and somebody wants to have a difficult conversation with us, or somebody is presenting something to us in a very dysregulated way and we feel our own defensive responses understandably kick in. When this starts to happen, what we need to do is to be able to contact our body again. And this isn't just to check in with how things are, but this is what helps to maintain nervous system regulation. There's a really important part in the brain called the insular cortex. And this is what gives us access to emotional awareness, mostly self-awareness, but also awareness of other people. And so if we can maintain access to our insula from the vagus nerve connecting to, first of all, the brainstem and then sending signals up higher, we can maintain a sense of how we're going, staying grounded, but the insula also will play a role in how the fibers of the vagus nerve that come back down into our heart and control the beats of our heart and come back down into our stomach and control if we feel tightness in our stomach or sick to our stomach. It will all play a role in that. So being able to stay connected to our internal world keeps the insula online, and that plays a big role, not just in nervous system regulation, but also in our emotional intelligence and being able to make good decisions when we're under pressure. And sometimes that can be a big challenge when we're having back-to-back one-on-one sessions with other people. And what I've seen recently is this huge surge in sharing information on codependency, like we can just be independent and always self-regulate. But the very thing that brings us back to safety and regulation the fastest is co-regulation, because it bypasses the thinking brain, which is slower. So those cues from another person's social engagement system and that sense of belonging in a community. These are really essential needs. You know, it's almost like saying that being thirsty is wrong. It's just a biological need. And that's the same as co-regulation and belonging. We need to feel that sense to be healthy and well. So one thing that's useful is to consider co-regulation and codependency are actually on a spectrum, but it's really to do with how connected we are to our inner world, or our sense of our interoception, our eighth sensory system, because the research shows that if we lack that connection to our inner world, we will rely more on the people and things outside of us to tell us how we're doing. And that's where we can become dependent on our sense of safety coming from somebody else outside of us. Now, if we are the health practitioner or the leader, manager, or the coach who is providing that sense of co-regulation, we can create a powerful shift in somebody else's nervous system quickly. But we also need to recognize that we need to take care of our own nervous system whilst we're doing that. And this is really what can lead to burnout and our workplace becoming unsustainable, particularly if we're having a challenging time ourselves. So we need to recognize our neurobiological limits. What we really need to be a good co-regulator for somebody else is to, first of all, have the framework of understanding of our own nervous system. And not just to know this through knowledge or in a cognitive way, but to really be able to feel and stay connected to it throughout the day. When we have different appointments, when we're seeing different people, as the day unfolds, okay, I'm recognizing I have an increased urgency in my nervous system to get this done. I recognize my shoulders are pulling up around my ears as I'm reading this report. I'm starting to recognize that I'm finding it hard to communicate well. What do I need to do to take care of my nervous system? Or it could go the other way. And that could be, I feel myself shifting towards that dorsal vagal state. What can I do to bring up some energy? So often if we find that we got some feedback, maybe it's from a client, maybe it's from a colleague that tells us that we may have done something wrong or something that we recommended didn't work, we might feel our sense spiral down into this sense of shame and have all those thoughts about, do I really know what I'm doing? A lot of that sense of shame and doubt can arise from the state of our nervous system that we've fallen into, particularly if there's other things going on in our life, like we haven't slept well, or there could be conflict in our relationships. So part of our capacity to be a good co-regulator is recognizing when we've moved into those other states and then knowing exactly what it is we need to do to take care of ourselves in that moment and bring ourselves back to regulation. We can only co-regulate other people from our ventral vagal state. That's the state of regulation where we feel safe and social, because it's in this state that we access our social engagement system. If we're in that sympathetic nervous system state, which happens and it's not something to shame ourselves for, but our social engagement system will change in the ways that we talked about, where we see a change in the voice, a change in facial expression, and a change in our ability to listen. Our bodies will also be sending messages through how we're tightening our shoulders, how we're moving with urgency, the sense of rushing. And even if we say the perfect words, we are still communicating to another person's survival brain through our social engagement system. And this really needs to be the priority, particularly if we are in a position where we are the expert, we are the one that people are coming to for advice, we are the leader. And it's not to say that we always get it right, but if you reflected back on the last week and your interactions with others, how often do you think that you were in that ventral vagal state of regulation and were able to offer your social engagement system and help others move back towards that sense of regulation? So what else do we need if we want to be able to be effective and work through a nervous system informed lens? What will also really start to help us is then being able to see that in the people around us. So recognizing when other people have moved into those different states and how we might gently need to adjust so that we can mirror that sense of safety and trust to them and bring that co-regulation in. And this is by no means easy, but it really can help us serve others better. And this is the essence if in the work that we do, where we help people grow, transform, and change, we can help to create those long-standing behaviors when we provide that sense of co-regulation, because people will move into the state themselves where they're most likely to listen to what it is that you're teaching them. This is a state where you can have the most influence, and it's also where you can empower them the most to create the lasting changes that they want to for themselves. Often when people are in that sympathetic or dorsal vagal state, they know that they want to create change in their life, but it is just so hard to do if they don't feel that internal sense of safety and connection. So whilst it is a big ask to be able to be a co-regulator for other people, it is really one of the greatest gifts that you can give to another person. It is what will make you successful in your own career. And it will help you have longevity, so that you can play the long game rather than being at risk for burnout. But it takes learning so that you attune to not only your own nervous system and build that interoception, but you are also able to tune into other people as well. And I invite you to think about what is one thing that you can integrate as a coach, health professional, leader, as a manager. What's one thing that you can integrate for yourself or for the people that you serve that will help to cultivate that co-regulation and build a trauma-informed environment? If this is something that resonates with you, I will pop below details of where you can learn more. Thank you so much.
This podcast contains general information only. It is intended to educate and inform, but does not constitute medical, psychological, or any other professional advice or services. From time to time, we may discuss sensitive topics that deal with trauma and other lived experiences that may be distressing to some listeners. If you or someone you know is struggling with their mental health and you're in Australia, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14. If someone's life is in danger, immediately call 000. The full podcast disclaimer is accessible via the show notes.